time tunnel.
Well, James Glick also has the time travel bug. He's a science writer with a particular interest in the cultural impact of technology. And he's written a number of best-selling books, including The Information, Faster, and Chaos. And Glick's just come out with a mind-bending book called Time Travel, A History. So, of course, I wondered what got him hooked on this idea of going back and forward into time.
I think the thing that really triggered the book for me was a surprising discovery, a surprising realization. At least it was a surprise to me. And that was that when H.G. Wells wrote The Time Machine in 1895, that was the first time anyone had considered the idea of time travel. I always imagined, and I think most people imagine, that time travel is an ancient idea, that it's always been with us, that for all of human history we had these fantasies that we all have today of being able to hop into a machine or walk through a door and find ourselves magically transported either into the future where things are going to be wonderful and strange, or back to the past where we get to meet Napoleon or the pharaohs or Queen Elizabeth. But it turns out that that's not true, that when H.G. Wells came up with this wacky idea in 1895, he really was the first person to do that. He was the first person even to dream of it. And so the first thing I wanted to know was why. Why hadn't people thought about these things before? And then the second thing was, why all of a sudden was it possible to have these fantasies?
And the thing that's striking about H.G. Wells' time machine is it only goes into the future. It does not go into the past.
Right. He's able to return home, but he doesn't even bother going to visit Shakespeare, find out what Shakespeare was like, which is sort of odd considering that Wells was a historian and was certainly interested in the past. But Wells was also, by temperament, and he said this himself, a futurist. That was a word that was not very common in those days. And he was very excited about the future and felt that it was important to be forward-looking and progressive thinking, and that all the smart people should be wondering what the world is going to be like and taking an active role in creating the future.
Just a few years after that, Einstein comes along and gives us a scientific understanding of time, a very new take on time. Was it just an accident that you sort of had this new physics of time just as kind of the science fiction about time travel is coming into being?
Yeah, funny coincidence, huh? That's sort of the $64,000 question. H.G. Wells' Time Traveler starts off the story with a little lecture to his friends about how time is nothing but a fourth dimension, like a fourth spatial dimension, which they had not imagined before. This is a wacky new idea that he has to explain in great detail. And then 10 years later, Einstein comes along and announces that, in fact, this is how the universe is. What are we supposed to think? Was Wells prescient? Was he up to date with the new physics? Actually not. He was interested in science, but he didn't know anything about physics. And Einstein, in turn, I would have loved it if I could have discovered Einstein reading The Time Machine and saying, aha, but that is not what happened.
Mm-hmm. So Einstein, correct me if I'm wrong on this. I mean, one of Einstein's big ideas is that time was not absolute. I mean, that was the old idea of Isaac Newton, that, you know, time was just sort of one thing forever. And Einstein said, no, it's actually relative.
Einstein discovered that there's no such thing as a single clock for the entire universe, that each of us has his or her own clock, and it will change its speed depending on how fast we're moving. So if you speed up, especially close to the speed of light, your personal clock runs slower compared to the clocks of people who are standing still. And this, of course, quickly became a great time travel device, because people could get into their spaceship and zoom around for a while and then return to Earth and discover, just like Rip Van Winkle, that everybody else had gotten very old or else died. If you saw Interstellar a couple of years ago,
yeah,
they use exactly the same gimmick because it's actually true according to the laws of relativity. It's a kind of unsatisfying version of time travel because there's no going back. It's just that your clocks slow down.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like, I mean, what Einstein did is he kind of broke down this sense that there is kind of this absolute divide between past, present, and future, right? It all kind of, I don't know, flows together.
Yes, a consequence of thinking about time as a fourth dimension is that you can imagine, and physicists do this mathematically speaking, the whole universe as a big block, the space-time continuum, a four-dimensional block where time is just one more direction and the past and the future are built in, so to speak. The past has happened, but it's right there for us to look at mathematically. And the future, while it seems to us that it hasn't happened, is also right there. And so the time traveler could just pick up and go from one place to another. I don't think that's necessarily how reality is. I think that's a nice mathematical model, but it's sort of key to a notion of how time travel might actually work.
So getting back to time travel in fiction, I have to ask you about a story by the great science fiction writer Robert Heinlein. He wrote the story called By His Bootstraps, published in the pulp magazine Astounding Science Fiction in 1941. Can you tell me about that story?
Yeah, I love that one. Part of what I love about all of these stories is looking at them and noticing how naive they are, how everything has to be explained very carefully to the reader because it isn't assumed that we know all of this stuff. So in Robert Heinlein's story, there's a narrator who's sitting in his room and he's writing some kind of thesis that has vaguely to do with time. You get some pompous sounding philosophical title of the thesis. And then lo and behold, a bubble bursts in the air next to our hapless hero and a man walks through who looks a little like our hero, but he's got a 3-day growth of beard and he's got a bruise on his face. And he says, oh, don't bother with that crap. It's all a lot of nonsense. We realize right away, because we've read these stories, we've seen the movies, that this is the same guy. But the guy doesn't recognize himself and hilarity ensues. It gets more and more complicated. Then the phone rings and it's another version of the same guy. And eventually, the guy who is now in the far distant future has to create the conditions in which it's possible for him to travel through time and yet not get into trouble.
On one level, this is just kind of a very clever story. You know, it sort of catches your imagination. But there are some deeper questions here which have to do with who we are, with the self, and with, you know, with our minds. Are we the same person that we were 20 years ago or 40 years ago? Will we be the same person, you know, decades ahead? Or does something change about us?
Yeah, I think that's the secret of all the different kinds of time travel fantasy. And really, that's why I ended up being so fascinated with the subject. That's really the motivation for the book, is that time travel stories aren't just fun. They're telling us something about ourselves and about the world we live in that we can't really explore in other ways. Philosophers talk a lot about time. Physicists talk a lot about time. And they're all living in the same culture as the rest of us, reading the same science fiction and imagining these twists and turns and variations. You've expressed one reason this story is so telling is that it's comic when Bob in Heinlein's story meets himself and gets into a fist fight. And then they start to think about, well, if I'm meeting myself, how come I don't remember that that happened before? Or how come only one of me remembers? And when we think about that, we can't help but be thinking about our own experiences when we think about the past. You know, we have our memories, and then we think back on something that we remember from 5 years ago. And then we remember that the last time we told this story, we thought about it sort of differently. And are we the same person now as we were when we were remembering the story last time and telling the story? And when we tell the story again tomorrow, are we the same person or a whole different person? These are not easy questions, and there are no absolute answers to any of them coming to us from philosophers or physicists, so we may as well explore them in our storytelling.
So what do you think? Are we the same person that we were yesterday or 5 years ago?
Well, what do you think? I think there's a little of both. I think we have a sensation of continuity in our personalities. Of course we're the same person. We have the same name. We have the same memories. We use the same personal pronoun. I did that when I was 6 years old. That wasn't somebody else. And yet, we're also able to tell ourselves exactly the opposite. I'm a different person now. I didn't do that. I would never do that. I am not the kind of person who does that. And we're also experts on regret. And We wish we could have second chances, and that's another powerful motivation for time travel stories, the desire to do things over. We can imagine ourselves going back in time and taking a different path.
So why do you think we are so obsessed with time travel? Is there a deeper reason here?
Yes, because we're obsessed with time, because time is what we care about. Time rules our lives. Time creates possibilities for us and also terminates possibilities for us. Time is a harsh mistress. We struggle with it every day of our lives and more now than ever in the past. So it's natural for us to turn to these stories to look for some insight or just to get some relief from a difficult reality.
Well, and you say something else in your book. It's to elude death.
I think that's maybe the secret hidden motivation for most time travel, or for that matter, for most of our worries about time. It's our mortality that we're concerned with, and time travel gives us a way to invent, at least temporarily, a kind of immortality.
Well, and then it's fascinating. I mean, just thinking about everything that goes along with death. I mean, not just thinking about our own death, but the death of loved ones. I mean, you know, what is mourning? But in some sense, going back to the time when the person was alive.
Yeah. When I say that time travel wasn't invented to the end of the 19th century, we can still remember that ancient Greeks, in their legends, imagined the underworld, where when you crossed the river Styx to Hades, you were able to meet your ancestors once again. Now that we know all about time travel, we could think of that as a version of time travel. Any story that allows you to meet your ancestors is in the time travel category, and a lot of modern time travel is motivated by exactly that.
James Glick is the author of Time Travel, A History. He talked with Steve Paulson.